I'm an addict, and my name is Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca.
And good evening to everyone. I feel like I just hit one. My heart is racing. I am extremely nervous. I have gotten prayed up, but I'm like on this roller coaster, so please bear with me. I was born and raised in Danville, Virginia. And when they called me and they told me that you will be speaking on indifference and intolerance, and I was unwilling at first, but the type of sponsor I had, she always emphasizes, if you must give back what was freely given to you, Rebecca, in order to keep it. So I try to live by this principle. And so even though I was angry, still unwilling, I said I would do it. My mind is a ball of confusion. I looked up the word indifference, and according to Webster, it is regarded as neither good nor bad. That's me. Neither good nor bad. Then I looked up the word intolerant, and it's defined in Webster as unable or unwilling to endure. That's me. So, like I said, I was born and raised in Danville, Virginia, and I am the eighth child. I am the only product of my mother and father. And as a child, I always carried these feelings of indifference. Because, see, my other seven siblings, they had the same father. And so I was constantly made fun of. I was belittled. I was called a bastard. And so it wasn't cool in 1965 growing up in the South like that. And so I carried these feelings with me, you know. And I remember in school, we were very poor. And I remember the feelings of indifference in school, you know, because I talked with the Southern accent. And like I said, I was very poor, so I didn't have the nice clothes and the nice sneakers. And so the kids made fun of me. And so I always wanted to fit in and be loved. And I remember going into my teenage years, and I was introduced to Mad Dog 2020 and marijuana. And when they said, come on, Rebecca, someone wanted me to join them. And I said, why not? Because, see, I was neither good nor bad. I really didn't do anything, you know. And so when I tried it, I liked it, and I thought I belonged, you know. And I'm going to tell you the truth. In the beginning, it was fun to me. It was very fun. I was able to graduate. I went on through college, still taking the same behavior, drinking and drugging. I graduated from college. I went into the military where my drinking escalated. I did 2 years in the United States Army. Then I came back to the Washington, D.C. area. And that's when I was introduced to crack cocaine. I can almost say end of story then, huh? And again, when that thing took a hold of me, and it would not let me be. I could stop. I could never stay stopped. By this time, I was employed by the federal government. I would go to work. I wouldn't do any work. In actuality, I went to work to get on. So my employer put it to me quite simple. You know, because he was not going to tolerate that kind of behavior. So he called me in the office. He said, you have a problem. We don't know what it is. But you must do something about it. And if you don't, we're going to fire your ass. So I'm the type of addict that my choices must be taken away from me in order for me to do something. Because I'll just stew in my own mess. And so when all my choices were taken away from me, I began to go into treatment. I heard you say something about different treatment programs. And I was indifferent when I went in those treatment programs because I had certain ideas, you know, and I identified out. I didn't do that. I never did that. Oh, I would never do that. Yeah, right. Y'all told me those were not yet. But I was that type of addict. You know, I was hard-headed. I was introduced to this program in 1989. My clean date is February 3rd, 1999. So that tells you what type of addict I am. And so I even signed up for a treatment. Needless to say, because, see, I took some of your suggestions, but I would not surrender completely. You know, certain things, I wanted to still smoke weed. I wanted to still drink. And, of course, none of this worked. And I was unable at that point to admit complete defeat, you know. And so y'all allowed me, y'all loved me, and the God of my understanding allowed me to do it my way. And I did what I did, and I got what I got. And I never forget, I had introduced a girlfriend. See, my employer, I had forfeited all my rights, and he could randomly give me urine tests. And, you know, I had certain things that I must do. You know, I couldn't be late for work. I had to come to work. I had to produce, you know, certain things I had to do. And again, I'm that type of addict. When all my choices are taken away from me, I can conform, you know. So I was able to do that, just getting by. And I remember going to meetings, you know, sitting in the back, would not raise my hand, would not share, no service. And I started to dress up the outside, you know. And I thought I had everyone fooled because I was started getting accolades like, wow, you're really looking good. You're really doing swell, you know. And I was doing absolutely nothing, you know. And but I was when I would go to meetings, I had this girlfriend that was still using. I would take her to meetings, and we would sit in the back, and I would punch holes. And unbeknown to me, when I had made a man my higher power. I heard you share about that too. And when that man used, I did what I knew to do best, and I used also. But my girlfriend, she had distanced herself from me. And unbeknown to me, she was implementing this program in her life, you know. And I remember I used to just get high out of my mind. You know, my body was telling me, you know, because, you know, I would black out. I would urinate all over myself, urinate all in my bed. Y'all told me when I was going through treatment that these were slight strokes, you know, and I didn't even know my body was doing this, trying to reject the drug, and I kept forcing it in me, you know. And I would say an earnest prayer, you know. I was one of those crying crackheads and alcoholics. I would cry and be on the piss pot, you know. Why I keep doing this? I don't want to do this anymore, you know. And I would pray, you know. I wasn't indifferent to spirituality. I just didn't think it would work in my life, because I thought you had to be the certain type of person for God to work in your life, you know. And I simply wasn't that type of person. But in my drunken stupor, or in my high stupor, I still would call out to the Most High God. And I remember one night before I blacked out, and I said an earnest prayer. And I said, God, just send someone to show me the way. I can't do this by myself. And that day I managed to go to work, and I had a little routine. I would come from work, stop by the corner store, come in the house, change out of my work uniform, then go around to the next corner and get that shit, right? So I had got my beer, came in the house, was upstairs changing out of my work uniform, and I heard the doorbell. And I ran to the door real quick because I thought it was someone there trying to get on, or someone there looking for it, you know. And it was that girlfriend that I had brought to meetings with me when I had to go, when I was forced to go. And she had a strange look on her face because we had lost contact with each other. And she looked at me and she says, I don't know why I'm here. She said, but there's a great women's rap down the street. She says, come on and go with me. And it was God answering my prayer and the God in me when I said, hold up, I think I will. Now, this is an addict. They got money. They got beer getting cold in the refrigerator. And something said, hold up, I think I'll go. And so I did. I went to that women's rap February 3rd, 1999. And, woof, I'm telling you, Y'all just loved me unconditionally. Y'all did not chastise me. Y'all did not belittle me. You know, y'all didn't make me feel less than. Y'all told me, we understand, Rebecca. Welcome back. And I felt so reconnected. And it was on that day that my journey began. You know, I began to listen. I wasn't quite so indifferent. And, you know, I could tolerate certain things. You know, I could tolerate a suggestion such as get into service. You know, Rebecca, you got to get into the middle of this thing, you know. They gave me this example. They say when you have animals, they travel in a pack. And the ones that are in the middle are safe. And the ones that are on the outskirts of the herd, they can get devoured and eaten up. And shit, I have been devoured and eaten up long enough. So I took that suggestion, so I began to get into service. And guess what, y'all? I began to look forward to going to meetings. You know, I didn't have to get a piece of paper signed anymore. It was a desire in me. You know, I went to a lot of meetings, and I got a sponsor, and she told me, she says, at the secretary's report, I want you to raise your hand and say your name and say how much clean time you have. I didn't want to do that, y'all. I really didn't want to do that. But something said, try something new, Rebecca. And so she said, you could even say, my sponsor's making me do this. And so in the meeting, I would raise my hand and say, I'm Rebecca. I have 29 days clean. And at the end of the meeting, guess what started to happen? Came up to me, hi, Rebecca. My name is so-and-so. And so I started to feel a part of, you know. And this thing started working in spite of myself, you know. She told me to call her every day, and I would call her. I would even call and leave a message on the answering machine. And I got to tell you this, you know, I'm prejudiced. And I don't know why my first sponsor, she was white. She was a white young lady. And something drew me to her. And in our sharing, I told her, you know, I don't like white people. She says, I can understand how you feel, and you have every right to feel the way that you feel. And I was blown away, you know. And we established a good rapport, you know. And I had that sponsor until she relocated to New York. And I took a lot of suggestions, you know. She really helped me, you know, in my recovery, in the early stage. And like I said in the beginning, I really didn't think the program of NA would work for an addict like me. You know, I could see it manifesting certain things in y'all's lives. But, you know, I had a hard time praying. And I said, well, how do you pray? Because, you know, I grew up in the South and we had to go to church. But I really didn't know how to pray, you know. I thought you may have to kneel a couple of times and cross yourself and burn candles or incense. I just didn't know. And so I began to ask people, and it was simple. Y'all tell me it was a simple program. And y'all said, Rebecca, you just talk to the God of your understanding like you're talking to me. And I find that that works for me, you know. And I remember when I had about 6 months clean, and y'all told me that I would have a spiritual awakening. I didn't know when it was coming, you know, and that the compulsion and obsession would be lifted. And someone close to me had went out. And in my good thinking, because I am a single parent with a son and a daughter, I kept emergency money in the house, $50 bill. And so when that person that was close to me used, woo, that thing hit me, y'all. I wanted to go. And I started hearing stuff in my mind. You don't have to use, even if you want to, Rebecca. But I was physically hurting because I began to work up in my mind where I was going. And I got that $50 bill out of my closet. And I called my sponsor. And as God would have it, she was not at home. And the answering service kicked in. And I was very angry. And I told her, I says, damn it, where are you? And by the time you get this message, it's going to be too late. I'm going to have used by then. And I slammed down the telephone, and I was almost out the door, and then a quiet voice said, there will come a time when the only thing between you and the drug of your choice is the God of your understanding. So I began to pray like y'all taught me. You know, I fell on my knees, and I began to talk to this God of my understanding and told him things like, you know, I've been enjoying my life thus far. You know, you've been blessing me, and, I'm starting to feel and be able to think, and I don't want to go back to where I came from because it ain't nothing back there but pain and misery. And I was like, help me, please. And then I began to cry uncontrollably, and then the snot began to come, and I just kept talking and talking to this God of my understanding. And guess what? The next thing I knew, the sun was coming through the blinds of my bedroom, and I was still in that position with that $50 bill in my hand. I had fell asleep in that kneeling position, and I was so elated. I said, ooh, this thing works, you know. It'll even work for an addict like me, you know. And when I went to the meeting that day, I shared that thing. I knew then that this program could work even for an addict like me, you know. And, you know, I never had an obsession or compulsion that strong from that day to this, you know. And I am just so grateful for this program, you know. I'm telling you, it has just blessed me and my family immensely. I came in here because I just wanted to stop smoking that shit. And what I have gotten, I cannot even describe. It has changed my way of thinking, my perception of things. It changes me in spite of myself. To me, that is the most miraculous thing. When I want to curse somebody out or when I want to do the wrong thing, I'm unable to because I keep hearing y'all. And I keep hearing stuff like, it's going to lead you to a drug. Change you must, or die you will, you know. I have an awesome network of people, you know, that reach out and love me unconditionally. Told me, it's great you go to meetings, Rebecca. Y'all go to meetings every day. It's great. They told me stuff like, the program is the 12 and 12. You need to start on your step work, you know. And so, and then this lady, she calls me every day. Have you answered a question on your fourth step today, Rebecca? You know, I mean, she just helps me so much because I told you what type of addict I am. I will only do what I think that I can get by with. And so unless I am pushed and forced, and see, it might irritate some people, but I appreciate, you know, the suggestions. At one time, I hated suggestions, you know. People always telling you what to do and what not to do. It really irritated me. But if I look at the root of suggestions, suggestions are mild suggestions. Because y'all have already walked this path. And I'm on the path, and I'm trying to walk this path. And y'all might have stumbled, so y'all trying to help me to not stumble, you know. And this thing is just awesome. That same job, that same employer that was going to fire my ass unless I did something, you know. And the 6.5 years of recovery, I've got 6 promotions. I am now a supervisor on that same job that was going to fire me. An addict like me, I'm able to be a parent, a mother to my son who's 15, my daughter who's 14. I have a rapport with my kids. My son came to me one day and says, Mom, you know, I tried marijuana. And, you know, I was able to sit down and talk to this child, you know, and ask him, you know, why? You know, how did it make you feel? What were you thinking, you know? A rapport with your kids, you know. I have a rapport with my daughter. You know, I took a suggestion about my daughter. My daughter was off the hook. My daughter was sending me to meetings. I heard people sharing me, if you have children, children will send your ass to a meeting. So my daughter was sending me to a lot of meetings. And I began to share about that destructive behavior she had. You know, I was angry with her. Don't you see mommy doing the right thing? Come on and help mommy. I even tried to give her a guilt trip. I mean, I couldn't even work. I was called over the school so much, suspensions and this kind of behavior. I told her one day, trying to put the guilt trip on her, I said, "You're going to make me use drugs again. You stress me out so much." She looked me right in my eyes. She said, "You're going to make me use drugs. You stress me out." So it was told by someone in my network. She says, "Well, Rebecca, bananas don't grow on no damn apple tree." The light went on. She said, "Your daughter has the behavior of an addict looking for a drug." I ain't like that, y'all. I didn't like that one bit. But I had to take a look at that, you know. I used through 9 months of prayer. Not one with one child, but with two. I literally tried to smoke my kids out of my womb. But, you know, God's will be done. And I know to this day that my kids were brought into this world to save Rebecca from Rebecca. Because left to my own accord, I would have self-destruct. If I didn't have any responsibilities, anything to do with Rebecca, So the God of my understanding, he knew. And so his will be done. And it was done, you know. And so it was suggested, get that girl into therapy, Rebecca. And so I balked it for a little while, but that behavior didn't get no better. And you change in spite of yourself. So I took a suggestion, you know. And slowly but surely, you know, my daughter's behavior is getting better. And the therapist told me something. You know, I'm always hearing something that I'm not too indifferent to, that I can tolerate now, you know. Because she told me, you know, they're writing the little notes and stuff, and I'm sharing, and then my daughter shares, and she's just writing down little notes. And she says, "Are you ready for my assessment?" And I says, "Well, yes, I am." She says, "Well, you used with your kids from birth until 8 years of age." And she said, "You told me your daughter was the caretaker in the house. You told me your daughter was the one that fixed the oodles and noodles. Your daughter was the one that laid out her brothers and her uniforms. Your daughter was the one that answered the door and told whoever was at the door was, 'Mommy's not here, Mommy's not feeling.' So she had the form of control in the house. And now that you want to be a parent again, you have taken her control from her. So in turn, she acts out because she wants that control back." I said, Now what do we do from here? I suggest therapy for you. And I suggest therapy for your daughter. And so I take that suggestion, and slowly but surely, you know, it's getting better, you know. And this thing is just awesome, you know. I'm able to just have a rapport with people in general, you know. Stuff that just baffles me, no longer baffles me. You know, I had my ups and downs. I was in and out of love and fellowship. Oh, I love love. I was in love. And some suggestions I didn't take. I remember this one suggestion in particular. When I was in love, and see, this man was going to marry me. I even made this man buy me this ring. That man ain't want to buy that ring. I made that man buy that ring. And so I had mentioned it. I really didn't want to tell anybody because you know how when you know what you're going to do anyway. But some kind of way it got out, and I was thinking about co-signing on a car because I love this man. This man going to be my husband. It was suggested to me, "Don't you co-sign." They don't know what they're talking about. Yeah, they knew exactly what they were talking about because that man that I was in love with, he loved that thing more, you know, and he used. And see, y'all had taught me enough that I cannot save no one. And so even though I was hurt, I had to immediately distance myself from that person because I told y'all I did not want to go back to where I came from because it wasn't nothing but pain and misery back there. But guess what, y'all? He stopped paying on that car. And guess who had to pay for that Cadillac? Now, I drive a damn Saturn, and I had to pay for a Cadillac and a Saturn. You talking about some feelings? And it won't no fun getting paid one day. Indifference. Getting paid one day and broke the next damn day, just like when I was using. But I was able to get through that with y'all people, you know. And I just learned so much. And I just thank God for y'all and the fellowship. And that's why I keep coming back. And I am Rebecca from Washington, D.C. And thanks for letting me share.